there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And now for the most powerful hour on radio, here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, 1 hour of uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. CIA operative Reza Khalili will join me in a few minutes to talk about his warning to U.S. intelligence officials this week that Iranian terror cells are planning to strike inside the USA within weeks. Later in the program, investigative journalist Ben Swan will tell us why he's leaving his local Fox TV affiliate to strike out on his own to report the truth. Is it possible that House Speaker John Boehner found his missing backbone today? The Republican speaker, who's been Mr. O's golfing buddy instead of his political adversary, said somebody must go to prison over the IRS targeting of conservative and patriot groups seeking tax-exempt status. Speaker Boehner said somebody at the IRS had to make a conscious decision to harass patriot groups. He said the Congress must find out the identity of the individuals and determine whether they violated federal laws. He said, my question is, who's going to jail over this scandal? Michigan's Socialist Democrat Senator Carl Levin repeatedly pressured the IRS in 2012 to investigate numerous conservative organizations. The leftist senator sent multiple letters to IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman demanding that the tax-collecting agency audit the groups. The socialist senator gave the IRS the names of 9 conservative organizations he wanted harassed, including the Club for Growth, Americans for Tax Reform, and Americans for Prosperity. Sounds like a radical bunch of people to me. We have information today that the IRS is now embroiled in a new explosive scandal. An unnamed California healthcare facility, simply identified in a lawsuit as the John Doe Company, is suing the IRS over a raid on the company's offices. The lawsuit alleges the IRS stole more than 60 million medical records of more than 10 million Americans during the raid. The plaintiffs alleged that the IRS action involved corruption and abuse of power when 15 IRS agents raided the company on March 11, 2011. The lawsuit alleges that, quote, no search warrant authorized the seizure of these records. No subpoena authorized the seizure of these records. None of the 10 million Americans were under any kind of known criminal or civil investigation, and their medical records had no relevance whatsoever to the IRS search. These medical records contain intimate and private information of more than 10 million Americans, information that by its nature includes information about treatment for any kind of medical concern, including psychological counseling, sexual or drug treatment, and a wide range of medical matters covering the most intimate and private of concerns. So let's not forget that the IRS is in charge of enforcing Obamacare. What could they do with 60 million health care records of 10 million Americans? In other scandal news, Attorney General Eric I Know Nothing Holder repeatedly told the House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday that he could not answer any questions related to claims the Justice Department infringed on the First Amendment rights of the Associated Press when it secretly collected telephone records of its reporters and editors. Mr. Holder said he recused himself from any involvement in the investigation, but he can't remember when he did it. Well, with all these new scandals swirling around the Obama White House, does anybody remember that just last Friday, Hillary Clinton's rump was roasting in the fire as high-level State Department employees came forward to say that she lied about Benghazi? Well, Hillary's an old hand at hiding corpses. She should not be let off the hot seat on Benghazi. The families of the dead Americans deserve justice. And the best one-liner of the week comes from Rush Limbaugh. The radio host said that Barack Obama is so obsessed with him that he lives rent-free in Mr. Obama's head. Here's several last day's news headlines. Billions of locusts are munching their way across Israel after crossing the border from Egypt. The sun unleashed three massive solar flares in a 24-hour period earlier this week. Space scientists are watching the super active sunspot responsible for the three flares for the possibility it may fire off another big flare this weekend. And if you're not sure about my warning that the planet is plunging into a mini ice age, check out the weather conditions in parts of Wales and Scotland today. A blanket of snow and ice covered parts of the United Kingdom as the country reels from a spate of unseasonably cold weather in mid-May. You're listening to True News. I'm Rick Wiles.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, you're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast. A follower of Jesus is required to seek peace with those around them. Here's today's moment with Charles Stanley.
The longer you live, the more valuable your friendships are, and you better take care of them. Because you see, the longer you live, the less time you have to build new ones. And when you've got a good friend, or you have a group of friends, wonderful friends, you take care of those relationships. If whatever's necessary, you work at having peace with them. And what that requires of us is we have to deal with our own sense of selfishness, our own sense of self-interest, our own sense of self-centeredness. We have to lay it down. And all of us know in conversations with our friends or people, husbands or wives or whatever, when we say things at times or we think things and we stop and think, you say, you know what, that's selfish on my part. Just go ahead and do that. That's fine. No problem. That's just me being self-centered. Yeah, that's just my pride that I can't ask you to forgive me or humble myself. And so we have to go back to ask, how much value do I place in relationships? So let me ask you as a parent, how valuable is your relationship with your son or your daughter? How valuable is it? What are you willing to do? How far are you willing to go? Is you willing to do anything and everything you know to do? Then if it doesn't work, at least you've done your best. At least you've given your all. At least as best you know your heart. Listen to what he said. He says, as far as it depends on you, as far as you can go without violating the word of God, he says, be at peace with that other person.
You're listening to True News, the Christian News Network. I'm Rick Wiles. Seven suspicious people were caught at 12:30 a.m. Tuesday trespassing at the Quabbin Reservoir in Massachusetts. Quabbin is one of America's largest man-made public water supplies. Boston's drinking water comes from that reservoir. Shortly after midnight Tuesday, a Massachusetts state police officer noticed two automobiles parked near the reservoir park entrance. The state trooper spotted five men and two women walking toward the two vehicles from the direction of the reservoir. Massachusetts State Police said five men and two women are from Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Singapore. They told the police officer that they were at the reservoir because of their education and career interests. The men said that they were chemical engineers and recent college graduates. They had no explanation for why they were trespassing on the reservoir property after midnight. After questioning, Massachusetts State Police released the seven individuals after citing them for trespassing. Massachusetts Water Resources Authority officials said today that water quality samples were analyzed at its lab Tuesday and all came back normal. The suspicious activity of seven foreigners from Islamic-dominated countries trespassing at a major public water supply reservoir happened within 48 hours of Reza Khalili's warning published Monday on WND.com. Reza Khalili is the pseudonym for the CIA operative who penetrated the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. He later published the best-selling book, A Time to Betray. Mr. Khalili's WND.com article on Monday said that he was given information from sources about a planned terrorist operation in the USA. Mr. Khalili's voice will be altered in this interview for security purposes. Reza, welcome back to True News.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, sir. I don't even know. Were you aware of this apprehension of seven people at Boston's water reservoir?
Well, no, I just read it today and posted it on my website, but that's most concerning. I don't know if you recall, but over a year and a half ago, I did report that they have done reconnaissance on several targets, one of them including our water supply facilities, and this is very, very concerning.
Reza, last year you reported that there were, if I recall, 10 terror cell operation command officers from Iran inside the United States. What you're reporting now, the basis of your story on WND.com Monday was that these terror cells inside the USA have been given the green light to proceed. Tell us what you've heard.
Yes, and as I've reported, there are three targets that have been chosen, and the teams have been given the go-ahead. And so it is concerning that that they will carry it out. Obviously, information has been passed to U.S. officials, and we hope and pray that it will be averted, or the publication of the information will make them think twice, because we have put the Islamic regime in Iran on notice, telling them that we know, and some of the details were published. But also, more concerning, though, is the information that there has been a new coalition between the terrorist minds, and that in a 2010 meeting in Iran between Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Ghost Forces, Saif Adel, the operational head of Al-Qaeda, and Mustafa Badruddin, the operational head of Hezbollah, that they all agreed on a plan for continued operations against U.S., and this new coalition is dubbed the Coalition of Muslim Soldiers. And so, I mean, it also includes the Al-Shabaab, the offshoot of Al-Qaeda. And so there are the names of the commanders, all participants. We have put them out. And the analysis is that the perception of security in America must be diminished. And the fact that America believes, in their view and in their analysis, that the war can be kept out of its home front and away in the Middle East must be turned around and therefore consume us with horrific events and internal problems such as it took place after 9/11. So it is very important to understand this threat and to help with the dissemination of information, raise awareness, and to put the regime on notice, because one way to battle it is to let them know that we know and therefore hope that they will not carry it through.
Reza, going back to this this latest warning, your source or sources told you that the go-ahead has been issued to these terror cells in the United States. And as you said, three targets have been chosen. But you also stated in your WND.com article that at least one of the attacks will be spectacular. What have you been told about this spectacular attack?
Well, this is information that has been passed to the officials with the specifics. It has to be verified. It has to be checked. And further actions are being taken. And therefore, I cannot divulge anything on that. It's the information that was received and passed on, which, if true, then it would be on the level of 9/11. But I don't need to raise unnecessary alarm with the American people. It's just that it's good that we have a flow of information, and it's good that the authorities are taking it seriously and looking into it.
Yes, I'm not asking you to reveal the specifics, but were you told the identity of the three targets?
Well, again, I can't get into the details exactly for the fact that we don't want to tell them that what we know and what we don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you did
comment that in your article that the method would be different. It would be a new method.
Right, and again, that specific method has been passed on to the U.S. officials. And remember, all of these, the veracity of the report, the information, everything has to be verified and checked and looked into. But the information is being taken very seriously, as always. And they're looking into it. But the plan by the regime is to continue these kinds of disruptions in harming us. And we saw in the Boston bombing that two individuals could carry a horrific act and affect a whole city. And its way of life. And so this new coalition, due to its composition of different people, ethnicities, and so forth, which is focused in Central Asia, it's very complex. The plan is to use as much as they can non-Arab assets, which would not link back to any specific groups or Iran or different nationalities. One piece of information that we made public is that one of the attacks, one of the planned attacks, could be similar to what happened in 2008 in Mumbai, where hostages were taken and so forth. You know, so they're trying to focus the international media on incidents in U.S. To prove that there is a lack of security, to diminish that sense of security, to create more problem for us economically, because everything that happens here, then we have to take extra precautions, new ways of precautions, and therefore spend manpower and our financials. So they are aware of that. This planning is very deep, and we need to understand that, and we need to put them on notice.
Reza, one last question regarding this warning that you were given. Again, you stated that your source told you that one of the attacks could come within the next 2 weeks. And that's very troubling if that information turns out to be correct. Can you comment in any way on that prediction?
Well, we stated that it could be within weeks, everybody is looking into it to make sure that if such a thing is planned, that it will be averted, and the veracity of it. And so it is being looked at very seriously. And obviously it is very alarming whenever there is information that imminent acts are about to happen. And obviously from the recent events, including the Boston bombing, it seems that the jihadists are refocusing on acts of terror on U.S. homeland.
Reza, was the Iranian order to terror cells in the United States to act now motivated by Israel's recent airstrikes on military targets near Damascus, Syria?
But that's a very good question. You see the escalation in Syria. Israel's continuous attacks, they take it that the next attack would be on Iran. And therefore, the aggressive posture of the regime in Iran, trying to destabilize the situation and at the same time send the subliminal message that they're capable of harming us and our allies. And kind of avert any further act by Israel. They believe and they expect Israel to attack. They're not worried about America. They believe the U.S. Will not attack. Actually, they believe such a policy is a red line by President Obama. But they believe that Israel will attack. And should it attack, then it could be the facilitator of the downfall of the regime, because it could give an opportunity to the people of Iran for another uprising and the fall of the regime. So it is very complicated, but the go-ahead for this action could very well be due to the complexities in the Middle East and what's taking place in Syria and what they believe that Israel will do.
Well, Demka File reported several weeks ago, directly after the Israeli attack on Damascus, that Iranian officials had called for a summit meeting of anti-Israel, anti-American Arab countries to convene in Tehran very soon, that over 40 nations had been invited. And there was also a high-level Iranian military official who sent word to expect, if I recall, he said something like expects spectacular events to happen very soon. So, I mean, when I read your story, that was the first thing that came to my mind, is this statement from this Iranian military commander a week or two ago, that we should expect spectacular events very soon in response to the Israeli bombing.
Right. And we have to connect the dots. And as you can see, and I don't know if you read my piece in Washington Times and Wordnet Daily, that right before the Boston bombing, actually back in February, the general from the Revolutionary Guards of the Islamic regime said that if the American people and people of England do not stand up to their government soon, they should expect terror attacks on their turf, and they're not going to be immune to the same action, referring to Syria. And so these warnings are given. These are subliminal messages that we've got to read into, but what has made them more emboldened is the lack of action by the Obama administration, because if you recall, there was the assassination attempt on the Saudi ambassador in D.C. The asset was captured, an Iranian citizen, and then President Obama promised a justified response. Well, nothing happened. The guy was imprisoned, and that's it, while several other figures who were in prison and tied to the regime were released all of a sudden. And I might add, strangely. And so every time these things happen and we promise response and we don't carry it through or we do not take harsher measures, they become more emboldened, believing that we are incapable of doing anything. And obviously they're mistaken, because wherever America is challenged, such as 9/11, such as the Pearl Harbor, we defended ourselves and stood up for the principles we stand for. And so unfortunately, I've said this over and over again, sending weak signals is not going to avert confrontation. It's going to invite the very confrontation that we want to avoid, and that's what they believe right now.
Reza, do you believe that we're already fighting World War III?
Well, you know, that would be a very strong statement to make, but this war against terrorism is within that frame, because it's not going to go away. It's a very difficult war that we are having. There are no specific states that we can attack and stop this by. There's a lot of complexity to the geography of the region, ethnicities, I think that the best solution, and I've been promoting this for a long while, is to help the Iranian people who by a majority resent this regime and the religion it preaches for taking down this regime. We could do that in several means that doesn't even need to fire a single bullet. But we got to invest, we got to strategize, we got to take action, and the sooner the better, especially now with the economic hardship in Iran due to the sanctions. But we are doing none of that. All we are doing is sending messages of appeasement. It's like we are begging for them to negotiate, and that's not a good position to be in.
What are your thoughts about the United Nations appointing Iran to head its disarmament committee?
Well, it's a joke. I mean, it's like putting a thief in charge of safeguarding the safe or the bank. And so Iran is under several UN sanctions, mandating it to stop its illicit nuclear program, missile program, and several other sanctions by the U.S. and the European Union. I mean, how can you expect the leaders of this country who have taken Iran and Iranians as a hostage to be in charge of such a body? I mean, we've had this before, that at UN, officials of the Islamic regime ruling Iran were appointed in the Commission for Women's Rights. I mean, it is a joke. They stone women to death. They lash women for not adhering to Islamic hijab. They're harassing women on a daily basis for wearing makeup or not adhering to the rules. And so this is yet another slap in the face by the UN.
Reza, today Israel's Channel 2 is reporting that Prime Minister Netanyahu warned Russian President Putin that if the Kremlin goes ahead and sells the S-300 missile system to Syria, it could provoke Israel into launching a war in the Middle East. What are your thoughts? Do you think the Kremlin is going to be intimidated by Israel, or are they going to go ahead and ship the missiles to Damascus?
I don't think Russia will be intimidated. I think that Russia is very well committed, along with the Islamic regime, in supporting Assad. Though the Islamic regime is losing hope in saving Assad, and I've reported on that. But the fall of Assad then will go into weakening of Hezbollah and the fall of the clerics in Iran, which would change the geopolitics of the region, and it will be totally against Russia's interests, as they want to see higher prices, higher energy prices, and as they see right now coming back to gain their stature on world stage as a superpower. And so all the politics of it shows that Putin, a staunch supporter of the clerics and Assad, is going to stick with them, because any change would be totally against the interests of Russia.
Reza, as many years as I've been doing this radio program, and we've been reporting about the buildup for the war with Iran, and I've watched this process over and over and over, where the war drums beat, and we send ships to the Mediterranean and the Persian Gulf, and you know, everybody beats their chest, and then everybody stands down, and then 6 months later it starts again. How long do you think this process is going to go on? Until somebody throws the first punch?
Well, I think, and I've said this for a long time, that the analysis back there with the Islamic regime is that they have concluded for a long time that U.S. will not commit itself to a military act, that the U.S. will stand in front of Israel with any military plan, and that the U.S. Has accepted a nuclear-armed Iran, and is only thinking about the containment strategy. And I've said this for a long time. And there's been different messages from different officials of the Obama administration throughout the past 4 or 5 years that has sent similar messages of containment, even though we say up front, oh, no, we want to avoid the nuclear-armed Iran. But again, as I've said from the beginning, that sanctions and negotiations won't work, which it has not. That containment won't work either. And the world will change forever. If even we think for a second that this regime becomes nuclear armed, the proliferation will become a nightmare. Every threat it makes, such as North Korea has, it will have a direct effect on global economy because more than 20% of world energy passes through the Strait of Hormuz. And it will embolden its terrorist network, Hezbollah, Hamas, even Al-Qaeda factions who are collaborating with the regime. And it will diminish the state of Israel. I mean, the security of Israel will be in question every day, and it will be unsustainable. Something will happen. But when it happens, when they have the nuclear bomb, the whole global economy will collapse. And we will see the worst depression, the greatest depression that humanity has witnessed. And so it's better to think and strategize and take action right now than to allow them to get the nuclear bomb. But the regime knows that the U.S., their analysis at least is that the U.S. has accepted the nuclear-armed Iran. That's why you see nothing is going on. They're continuing with their program. They're enriching. They're working on missiles and the warheads. But I don't think Israel will. Israel completely understands the situation. They also understand if they go at it alone, there will be severe consequences. But it will be better to take action now for them than later when their total existence would be in question.
All right. I'm going to extend this interview 2 minutes because I got one more question. I don't think Barack Obama is a friend of Israel. I don't think he wants to help the nation of Israel. He certainly doesn't like Benjamin Netanyahu. My personal opinion is that he is a puppet for the Saudi royal family, and that's who pulls the strings. Now, I'm saying this because I don't think Mr. Obama is ever going to take any action against Iran because he's concerned about Israel. I would say he would only take action against Iran if the Saudi royal family ordered him to do it. What are your thoughts?
Well, the Saudi family has been hollering their lungs out over the Iranian nuclear program for U.S. to take action, and we haven't. And so you've got a major proxy war right now in the region between the regime in Iran and the Saudis over Yemen, Bahrain, Egypt, the Gaza Strip, and most important, in Syria, where the Saudis are pushing for the overthrow of Assad and the regime is defending it. And the same thing is happening vice versa in Bahrain. And so there's a major proxy war. The Saudis want to see this regime gone. They want to see their nuclear program destroyed, and they've been urging us to do that, but unfortunately we haven't listened. And so I think that the Obama administration truly believes that a nuclear armed Iran can be contained, and that it is worried about the cost of any attack. It's not sure about the outcome. It hasn't strategized around it, and more so, mistakenly and on a delusional level, has believed for a long time that they can negotiate with the clerics in charge, and that there can be a peaceful solution. And so that, in my belief, that has been the cause.
All right. My guest, Reza Khalili, CIA operative who penetrated the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and you can read his best-selling book, Time to Betray. Reza, thank you. Appreciate you being on True News today.
Thanks so much for having me. God bless.
You're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast. Rick will return after this announcement.
This is Max McLean. What are the benefits of knowing God's Word? Listen to the Bible from Psalm 119. I am laid low in the dust. Preserve my life according to your word. I recounted my ways and you answered me. Teach me your decrees. Let me understand the teaching of your precepts, then I will meditate on your wonders. My soul is weary with sorrow. Strengthen me according to your word. Keep me from deceitful ways. I have chosen the way of truth. I have set my heart on your laws. I hold fast to your statutes, O Lord. Do not let me be put to shame. I run in the path of your commands, for you have set my heart free. From Psalm 119. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
Hear more at radiobible.org.
Well, next Friday, May 24, marks the start of our 15th year of international radio broadcasting. And you know, looking back, I've reported a lot of news over the years that the general public never knew happened because they're spoon-fed propaganda and disinformation from the mainstream news media. Approximately 6 months ago, I came across a YouTube video of a Fox Television affiliate news reporter in Cincinnati, Ohio. His segment on that TV station was called Reality Check. And I was really impressed with his awareness that perhaps there's more to national and world news than what the public is told by the media. And I was impressed by his on-air style of asking the right questions. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, this young guy is asking far too many questions on television to have a career in the mainstream news media. And he's got three options. Number one, he can compromise and go along with the propaganda and the agenda. Number two, he can get himself booted out the door for asking too many questions on the air about news events. Or number three, he can go out on his own and make a name for himself as a fearless, independent, investigative journalist. Well, his name is Ben Swan, and he's on the telephone right now to tell us which one of those options he has chosen. His website is benswan.com. Ben, welcome to True News. Which one is it, my friend?
Well, it looks like at this point it's certainly going to be striking out on our own and seeing what we can develop. You mentioned our website. One of the things we're going to be launching in the next few weeks is an initiative to really do some independent media. But one of the things I kind of see myself as is a bridge between alternative and mainstream media and really trying to reach people who are unaware of a lot of the stories that are out there or the implications of national policy, the implications of foreign policy, and helping them to kind of, I think you used the term before we started here, but open their eyes and wake up to what's really happening. And so one of the things that I'm really working to develop is a platform by which not only can we educate and inform people, but then taking it even to the next level of now engaging and activating people to make some serious changes in this country and around the world. So we're going to begin this process. Unfortunately, I can't give you too many details yet, but if you go to my website, benswan.com, and if you fill out, there's a place there where you can put in your email address. We will be emailing out within 2 weeks. The folks who are on there will be the first to know exactly what this platform looks like in detail. And we're going to break down, you know, really in detail how we're going to go through this process. Again, it's a four-prong approach of information, education, engagement, and activation.
All right. But the bottom line is your job at the Fox TV affiliate in Cincinnati, that's coming to an end at the end of this month. Is that correct?
It is. That's correct. You know, I've really had to decide what I wanted to do at this point. And the station obviously really likes what we're doing. They want me to stay. But it was kind of a situation where I really believe that the time is right. The opportunity is right. There's never been a time really in world history where you've had kind of this collision of information and technology. You know, 15 years ago, you mentioned you started this radio program. 15 years ago, the internet was not what it is today. Very few people were surfing the web for anything, certainly not for news and information. And everything shifted. Everything has changed so radically. I mean, the idea of streaming sites and video on demand and all that 15 years ago didn't even exist in people's minds.
I know. But I tell people, you know, we were podcasting before there were pods.
I mean, good point.
We were on the internet in 1999 because there was no other option. We had the internet and international shortwave radio. Those were the only two options available to us because mainstream radio wouldn't touch me with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. You know, they still won't. So 15 years later.
But, yeah, and 15 years later, you don't need them.
I don't need them.
Slater, and that's what's so striking about just the technology and media landscape of today. And that's where we see a lot of either local broadcasters or national network broadcasting. They're so far behind the curve in that respect. You know, they're still operating off of a model that's 40 to 50 years old. And they're missing the audience. And the audience is out there. They're interested. They want to be engaged. But they want more than just someone to read them headlines. They want to be engaged in the subject matter. They want to learn about it. And they want to be able to actively do something about what they're hearing, not simply be passive listeners.
That's right. Well, you know, 12, 13, 14 years ago, the big names in the mainstream news media, you know, they used to you know, make me mad. I used to get frustrated. Now, I look at them as they're the court jesters, you know, in the New World Order. They're just clowns. They make me laugh now. They're so ridiculous. I can't even get myself worked up over them. They're clowns that don't deserve any attention. And so I don't even pay attention to any of them anymore. Because they're just media whores and prostitutes. They'll say whatever they got to say to get their paycheck and keep their salaries going. They don't care about truth or anything else. It's about just having that job at the network and doing what they're told to do. And you know, I'm free. I can say whatever I want to say. I can report whatever I want to report. And so I don't even think about these people anymore. And what you're saying is that the public, because of the internet and because of changing technology, the gatekeepers no longer can keep the gate closed against guys like you and me. They can't do it anymore. The gates are open. And the public is finding there are other voices out there. There's other sources of news, and we don't have to watch the court jesters on television news networks anymore. So I'm really glad you're making this this step. And let me ask you this, Ben. You're a fairly young guy. I guess you're in your 30s?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. For you, when did you, just personally, when did you start to become aware that, you know, maybe there's more to some of these stories than, you know, what's coming across the AP line?
You know, I think for me, a lot of it began when I was working down in Texas. That's where I'm originally from, is West Texas. And my TV career started out as a news photographer and then worked my way up to being a reporter, then a morning anchor, and then a primetime anchor, all in my hometown of El Paso. And when I was a primetime anchor, started covering heavily the drug war in Mexico. And I would go into Mexico and we would interview people there. We would cover crime scenes. And we were trying to explain, you know, to local viewers, certainly what was happening and the dynamics of this drug war. And what we found is as I was doing that, I was also really trying, you know, I was with an NBC affiliate there and a Fox affiliate. And the NBC specifically, when I was covering the drug war, I was really trying to connect with the networks, either Fox Network, NBC Network, in terms of passing information to them. This is the truth of what's happening down here. You know, it's not what politicians are saying. It's not what local law enforcement is saying. You know, everything is being scrubbed and sanitized. And this concept of what's happening in Mexico is really just bad guys killing other bad guys. And therefore, it's almost like a, you know, population control. You know, it's not a problem as long as narcos are killing other narcos. And so as I was trying to pass that information, what I found is that nobody was really interested. And it became a huge frustration for me that there was just a lack of interest in what was really happening. And so the narrative continued to kind of be propagated in these networks. And whether it was networks claiming that trying to co-connect the idea of the drug war and immigration being connected, and what was happening in this drug war was not connected to immigration. It were two totally separate issues. Or on the other side, those who were trying to ignore it by saying, well, you know, it's just these drug gangs killing other drug gangs. And then out of that, you know, watching Fast and Furious and all these things that were coming about, you know, we were on the forefront of all that reporting. And ultimately, you know, I realized, listen, that the networks aren't interested in the truth of what's happening here. They're interested in their narrative.
What did you conclude about Fast and Furious? I mean, if you were there in El Paso, you were getting a good view of what was happening. What was your conclusion about Fast and Furious?
Oh, I think there's no question that the Fast and Furious, and it's sad to me that it's still to this day, you know, we're having a lot of hearings in Washington about Benghazi, and yet this Fast and Furious case has gotten very little. Daryl Issa has, you know, pursued it somewhat. But other than that, it's gotten very little attention. And the fact is, Fast and Furious is a very clear-cut case. People talk about false flag operations all the time. Here is a clear-cut case of false flag where our government is not just allowing guns to flow into Mexico. They are requiring, they're forcing gun dealers along the border to give these guns, to sell these guns, multiple guns, forcing them to violate U.S. law by selling these guns to straw purchasers who are going into Mexico and distributing them and losing track of them and being okay with that so long as it served the purpose of being able to create gun control legislation here. I think anyone who steps back and looks at it can see clearly what the ATF was saying, and we reported this at the time, what the ATF was saying about the number of American guns being found in Mexico was a lie. It was inaccurate. If you look at the stats from the GAO, the numbers were completely wrong. They say 90% of the guns found in Mexico are from the United States at crime scenes. That is untrue. It's fewer than 11%. And I did a lot of analysis on air there explaining to people that, in fact, it's fewer than 11%. What they're actually saying is 90% of the guns recovered in Mexico that they believe are from the United States and then sent back to the United States for verification are from the United States. But again, and this was stuff that I was putting out there in El Paso, and it was, you know, no matter what I did to try to get traction for networks to say, look, these are the real numbers. Look at the GAO reports. Nobody was interested.
Do you think that the motive for Fast and Furious was to set the stage for a gun control drive in the United States?
Absolutely. I think if you, again, if you look at what the language that was being used at the time, the ATF hearings where they were talking about the guns that were coming from the United States flowing into Mexico, that it was responsible for so many innocent people's deaths, compared to the reality of those numbers. When you looked at the actual numbers, these guns were coming from Venezuela, they're coming from China, and the vast majority, by the way, the vast majority of guns that end up at crime scenes used by Mexican drug cartels come from the Mexican army. Mexican soldiers who sell their guns to narcos take cash for them, and then the U.S. replenishes those guns with money that our government is spending buying weapons for the Mexican army. So the vast majority of those guns are simply passed from Mexican soldiers to drug cartels. And that's not, just a theory of mine, and that's not speculation. I mean, that is factually what the GAO found when looking at these crime scenes in Mexico.
You know, Ben, personally, I mean, I believe every official in the ATF, Justice Department, White House, involved in Fast and Furious should be indicted, prosecuted, and sent to prison for violating U.S. gun laws. What they did was criminal. They violated the law. I mean, if you would have taken one gun from El Paso over the border and sold it to a drug dealer, your butt would be locked up in prison right now.
Absolutely.
So why can Eric Holder and Barack Obama and the guys at the ATF, why can they break the law? I don't get this.
That's a great question. It's a great question that no one in mainstream media, as you mentioned, is asking that question. Not just in that case, but even as recently as what's happened with this scandal with the IRS, it's the same thing. When Lois Lerner, who's the head of this nonprofit, verifying nonprofits for the IRS, comes out and says, we have been illegally targeting these groups based on the fact that they have Liberty, Tea Party, 912, or their mission is to educate people on the Constitution, when they say that was our intent and that's what we were doing for the last 2 years, and then finishes with, and we're sorry, and expects it to end there, that's the problem that we have in Washington, is that people who commit criminal acts that the rest of us would be prosecuted for are not prosecuted.
I think, Ben, we what's going on in Benghazi is another Fast and Furious operation, because I had Clara Lopez, a former CIA clandestines operation manager, 20 years of the CIA. I mean, she was on this program last fall, saying her sources in the intelligence community were telling her that Obama was running guns and rockets to to the rebels in Syria through Benghazi, and that's what this was all about. I take it as far as saying, and you may not agree with this, but I really think this is what the truth is going to turn out to be, is that Ambassador Stevens, for some reason, got crosswise with the Obamanistas in the White House and Hillary Clinton, and I think he was eliminated. I think he was standing in the way of a criminal operation that was underway, and they set him up to be murdered. I mean, his bodyguards, his security detail at the consulate were al-Qaeda. I mean, the right. State Department hired al-Qaeda terrorists to be the security for the U.S. consulate. And then on the night that this attack started, special forces were ordered to stand down. I mean, he was set up. There was no way that man was going to survive that day. And, you know, Hillary and Obama had no fingerprints on this thing. It was those bad terrorists that did this. But the real story there is they were running guns and rockets and weapons to rebels in Syria, and the rebels just happened to be al-Qaeda. I mean, if this isn't an impeachable operation, then what can get you impeached these days?
Right. Well, and I think the case that's being made, and I've heard it from several different sources that is kind of the predominant belief here among those who aren't allowed to speak, if you will. But the predominant theme seems to be yes, that we were running guns through Benghazi to the rebels in Syria, as you said. But the other fact is this, and even that term rebels is a little bit of a trick term because we know they're not actual rebels; they're not Syrians.
No.
But the Free Syrian Army, I interviewed a guy from Damascus about this, and he was talking about the people inside Syria, and he says, 2 years ago, most people in Syria had justifiable complaints about government there, were frustrated with the government system there, and were pushing back against it, he says. But he says, today, 2 years later, if you are an actual Syrian, you're siding with the Syrian government, because what you've seen are none of these guys in the Free Syrian Army are Syrians.
That's right.
They're al-Qaeda fighters from Europe. They're al-Qaeda fighters from Afghanistan. They're al-Qaeda fighters from Iraq. They're al-Qaeda fighters from Libya who have now moved into Syria. And by the way, the Libyan rebels who were part of the overthrow of Gaddafi were not Libyans.
That's right.
Many of them were from Pakistan and Afghanistan. They were guys that we captured. The head of the Libyan rebel group was that al-Hasidi. He was an al-Qaeda fighter who had fought against our troops in Afghanistan. We had captured him. He was being held in Pakistan. And then we allowed him to be released where? In Libya to lead that so-called resistance against Gaddafi.
And by the way, does anybody know today whatever happened to Colonel Gaddafi's 144 tons of gold?
Right. Right.
Why do I have a feeling that it's in the New York Federal Reserve vault?
Well, wherever it is, I mean, and again, you have to remember that none of the stuff that we're talking about here is not stuff that we're simply, pontificating about and coming up with these theories on our own. And,
it's documented. And it's documented truth, Ben.
It's all documented. Every bit of it's documented.
And when did supporting al-Qaeda become okay? I mean, I hear John McCain and Lindsey Graham, these mm-hmm. warmongering Republicans, and they're saying that Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Chuck Hagel should, they should be supplying aid to the rebels. And I'm like, Mr. McCain, that the rebels are al-Qaeda. When did it become appropriate for the United States to team up with al-Qaeda? I mean, I thought we were fighting al-Qaeda. Oh, that's right. Back in the 80s, we created al-Qaeda. Which one is it?
Well, that's exactly the issue. Look, when I interviewed President Obama last year, that was one of the questions I specifically asked him, was why are we providing assistance to these rebels in Syria who are al-Qaeda fighters?
And what did the dear president say to you?
Well, he says to me, that's a huge concern, and we're looking at that very carefully. You're looking at what carefully? You're funding al-Qaeda. There's no question they're al-Qaeda. And listen, if anyone has any doubt, there's a thing called YouTube out there, and all you have to do is look up Free Syrian Army on YouTube, and the so-called Free Syrian Army is posting their own videos where they're saying they're Al-Qaeda, where they're singing songs about killing all the Christians and Jews and any Muslim in Syria who does not side with them. And so they have videos of them cutting people's heads off.
Hey, how about eating their organs? That's the latest one.
I was going to say, there's a latest one of a guy from the Free Syrian Army eating someone's heart, and it's on YouTube. And yet we're saying, to as you said, we have senators and people who are, and by the way, we are about to begin overtly. We've already been covertly providing weapons and money. We're about to begin overtly doing it, saying that this is something that's necessary. Why every single mainstream media outlet is not saying, before this happens, wake up people and pay attention, because what happened in Libya is happening in Syria. And the fact is, Al-Qaeda has expressly said their goal is to create an Al-Qaeda state between Syria and Iraq as one super state. They've said it. They're not denying it. They're not hiding it, because no one here is talking about it. Well, at least no one in mainstream. The rest of us are talking about it.
Ben, blessings to you on your new journey. I encourage you to stay on the path of searching the truth. The public needs to hear it, and there needs to be more voices. And I'm glad to see more and more people coming forward, and because of technology, able to do what we've been doing for 15 years. And now this is exciting that there are young guys like you who are picking up the mantle and saying, we are going to tell the people the truth, and we don't care who it upsets. We're after the truth. And I just hope, pray that you have good success in what you're doing. My guest, Ben Swan. And if you want to give him some suggestions, he's looking for advice and suggestions. His website, Ben Swan, Swan, S-W-A-N-N, BenSwan.com. Ben, hope to hear from you. In the months to come, we'll be sure to have you back on the program.
I appreciate it. Just, can I say one other thing?
Yes, sir.
Also, if folks want to contact me, you can also find me on Facebook. Just search Ben Swan. Got two pages on there. One is called Ben Swan Full Disclosure, and the other one is just my main page, Ben Swan. So I'd love to hear from your listeners there. Let me know that you heard me on this show, and give me some feedback on it. I'd love to hear it.
I said to Ben Swan, during the interview, that next Friday marks the beginning of our 15th year of radio broadcasting, reporting the truth. And he and I were speaking before the program. I told him I'm very encouraged to see young guys like him starting out with independent news programs. And I pray for his success. My advice to him was to pursue truth, not fame or money. And that if he did not have divine protection, he'll end up like Andrew Breitbart. So pray for Ben Swan. God has been good to this ministry, and so have a lot of people around the world who have financed us over these 15 years. I feel impressed to remind everybody listening that the expenses of this international ministry are paid every month by the love gifts of our audience. We have no other source of revenue. And with our faith in Jesus, we're stepping out this month to expand this program to video. And I invite you to finance our television studio and production center. The goal is $100,000. We're making progress, but we've got a long way to go. You can donate online at truenews.com, T-R-U-N-E-W-S, truenews.com. If you use PayPal, just enter in support@truenews.com. Checks, money orders, precious metals, and foreign currencies may be sent to P.O. Box 690069, Vero Beach, Florida. The zip code is 32969. Folks, we're going to do it. This is the month we crossed the Jordan.